This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world, especially in Canada, on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervy. I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today I am here in the beautiful studios in Culver City, California, to be the managing partner of your life. With me today, I am so happy to look at this yellow dress, this smiling face with a big sticker on her breast. It is none other than Kerry Kasem.
Wow, thank you for that introduction. Thank
you. Why are you looking so happy?
Because it's International Day of Happiness. It's actually United Nations International and National Day of Happiness.
Really?
And so I was down in Redondo Beach, and it was great. There was a big wall, and you signed things that what you do to make life happier for other people.
And I am miserable today, so miserable. I just finished coaching my four-year-old son's T-ball team, and it is the worst possible experience anyone could ever have, trying to get four-year-olds to pick up the ball and throw it to first, to hit the ball off a tee, and to run to first. I wanted to jump off a bridge.
All you have to do to get a little happier is...
No, I was really upset. Let me tell you, the parents wouldn't help me one bit. They all went off and had coffee and left me with 9 4-year-olds, and they were just having a great time. I couldn't get them up to bat. I was pulling and yanking their jerseys. They were crying and spitting on
me.
How
were the parents not there to help you?
They were taking a break. I was the nanny.
You were the babysitter.
Coach nanny.
Well, if you go to Twitter and you just put in hashtag HappyAxe and live happy with Jeff Olson, it's all these people doing different acts all over the world today that make other people happy.
Well, I'm looking at you and I'm going to try and be a little bit happier. But, you know, there are a lot of people who are not happy about the travel ban.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that for a few minutes. And then, of course, we have none other than Mark Mermelstein here. Tell us about Mark.
Mark's awesome. He's my lawyer, and he's a lawyer for a lot of people experiencing elder abuse, financial elder abuse, guardianship fraud. He works with Kasem Cares. He works with me. He works with Kathy Wright Braun. Incredible lawyer. I mean,
and you have some
lawyers.
Important announcements to make today.
I do.
And I'm excited that they're going to be on Gervy's Law. So you really want to listen to our next segment when Mark Mermelstein comes on, and Kerry and Mark will talk about all the great work that Kasem Cares is doing throughout the country. Then finally, before we sign off today, we are going to talk a little NC2A basketball. And we have Rob Stone, who's the lead college basketball host for Fox Sports, on the show. And he's going to give his perspective on college basketball in this country today. So don't miss that later on the show. Without further ado, though, we are very proud and happy to have with us today Dr. John Eastman. Dr. John Eastman is the Henry Salvatore Professor of Law and Community Service at Chapman University, the Fowler School of Law. He's the former dean of Chapman University. Dr. Eastman, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Thanks very much for having me on your program. First time, I think.
It is the first time, and we've had so many preeminent attorneys and professors and deans. In fact, we've had the dean down the road from you on the show quite a few times, Erwin Chemerinsky, and I'm sure you have maybe different views, but I know you know the Constitution. Let's talk really quickly about this travel ban. Is the opposition to the ban political, or is there a legitimate legal argument against it?
No, I think it's extremely political, and it's deeply unfortunate that the courts are involving themselves in what are effectively national security decisions that our Constitution assigns to the president, not to the courts. And if the president's power himself, it could not be more clear under Article 2, there's an act of Congress that even bolsters it, that is unambiguous. The president has the power to suspend entry of any class of aliens when he deems it's necessary in the national interest. I mean, it doesn't get any clearer than that.
So let me ask you this, Dr. Eastman. Why are judges in Hawaii, in Maryland, talking about race, religion, nationality, and why are they talking about the Constitution if this is a protection? The country's at risk here. Why are they talking about that?
Well, most of the judges that have weighed in have been Obama-appointed judges. The cases are being brought in jurisdictions that are heavily left-leaning. The Ninth Circuit decision on the last go-around, for example, doesn't even cite that statute that makes it unambiguously clear that Congress has delegated this exclusive power to the president. And then finds that the plaintiffs challenging the president's order were likely to prevail on the merits. I don't know how you can, in a straight face as a judge, write such an opinion without citing the relevant statute that makes it unambiguously clear the president is going to win here.
And the president, last president, Obama, did this with several countries. He put a travel ban, but he didn't make it as public. But he did. He put travel bans and he banned certain countries, but we didn't hear this uproar. Why is that?
Well, because I think this is a strategic effort to deprive the American people, deprive this president of implementing the agenda on which he was elected, and therefore to deprive the American people of the results of the election last November. This is really extraordinary. I published an article a couple of weeks ago in the Hill magazine in Washington, D.C., saying that this is a judicial coup that we're witnessing here.
But people don't understand it because they think the judges are supposed to be holier than thou and don't realize that first they may be appointed by a certain political party, and second, they have such leeway in what we call the interpretation of the Constitution. There's originalists that say that the Constitution really can't be interpreted, but you don't believe that, do you?
Well, I do. Look, there's two views here. The Constitution says that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. About a century ago, one justice of the Supreme Court said, yes, that's true, but the Constitution is whatever we judges say it is. And that little twist has turned constitutional supremacy, which is what our Constitution provides for, into judicial supremacy, which makes the courts or unelected judges the highest law in the land and not the Constitution itself. That is not the system we have, and it's not a system we would design from scratch if we wanted to. We would never hand the kind of power over to unelected judges that these judges are now claiming.
And it's interesting because we had Alan Gura on the show a couple weeks ago, and he, of course, was the lead attorney in the Heller case, and he talked about the Constitution being a framework. They, of course, didn't anticipate what the issues of the day today would be. However, the framework for interpretation and for upholding the laws of the land was in the Constitution, which these judges should be following.
Well, that's right. The judges are not above the law any more than anybody else is. And the framers did envision this issue. They didn't envision whether we would have blockade from folks coming in from Syria and Yemen. But one of the first major international crises that the young country faced back in the 1790s was terrorist acts committed by the Barbary pirates. Those are some of the very same countries at issue here on the north coast of Africa. And from the very beginning, our constitutional system recognized that handling those kind of problems was a matter vested
right
in the executive, not in a court of law.
And that's where we get into the Second Amendment argument, the security of the nation, the militias. But that's not what the liberals are saying or what some of these judges are saying. They're talking about First Amendment rights, which, of course, some of these people don't have any because they're not citizens. And they're also talking about non-discriminatory politics. But that's impossible.
Right. Look, both the Hawaii and the Maryland decisions are based on the Establishment Clause, not on the Establishment Clause rights of those who are seeking visas to come in the United States, because the Supreme Court and the law is unbelievably clear that there are no such rights. Nobody has a right to enter the United States unless we choose to admit them. And so what the judge in Hawaii and the judge in Maryland both said is that, well, folks who are already here, you know, feel bad about this because they think this is a Muslim ban, and if they're Muslim or have friends who are Muslim, they're offended, and therefore they've got a right to basically substitute their judgment for the president of the United States and the majority of Americans that backed him and elected him president of the United States.
Right. And interestingly, last week we had Rabbi Shmuley Boteach on the show from Israel, and he was saying this is anything but a Muslim problem. It has nothing to do with it. And he talked about security, as did Ilan Carr, who was on the show last week. So you're hitting on some of the same points, but you mentioned the Supreme Court. Before we let you go, Dr. Eastman, we have to talk about the Supreme Court. Will this issue go before the Supreme Court?
I think it will have to, because what we see here is a level of lawlessness on the lower courts that I haven't seen in my lifetime. And it appears to be part of a concerted effort to undermine the results of the last election. Quite apart from the particular issue on President Trump's temporary ban on immigration from six countries that, you know, we can't even contact anybody to properly
right.
vet. There is a broader question here about the lawlessness of these lower courts, and the Supreme Court is absolutely going to need to step in, and I hope relatively quickly, because this thing could spin out of control very quickly.
Absolutely, and the question, though, becomes, what are we going to do when it gets to the Supreme Court, if it does? We've got a 4-4. Do you see any of the justices changing, walking across the aisle and saying it's going to be 5-3, and if so, which one?
The question of the lawlessness here, the ignoring the relevant statute, is not something that ought to have a partisan outcome on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but get realistic. Get realistic. You're talking what ought to occur. We're in the United States of America. What does occur?
Well, what occurs when things like this happen in the Ninth Circuit is the Supreme Court has been unanimous and summarily reversed in the Ninth Circuit at roughly a rate 6 times larger than any other circuit in the country. And I hope we get something like that. I have every reason to expect it, or at the very least, a 6-2 decision.
Who are the two? Sotomayor and Kagan. You're saying Sotomayor and Kagan are going to be the only two?
No, I suspect Justice Ginsburg and Sotomayor.
Yeah, I guess Ginsburg, right.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know if Ginsburg's still going to be around, but if she is, I think you're right. So you're saying that some of the other sit-on-the-fence justices are going to look at the Constitution and rule against it and disregard their political perspective.
Well, yeah, because I think they're going to be confronted with the notion that the courts are going to step in and second-guess every national security decision coming out of the White House or the Department of Homeland Security. They know for a fact that that's not decisions that the courts are equipped to make, and our Constitution assigns those decisions to the president.
So the last question before we let you go, if it does deadlock at 4-4, tell us what's going to happen.
Well, I don't think it will. I suspect by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, we're going to have another justice up there, and we'll have a 9-member court. And so we'll have a 5-4 decision.
It's going to be Gorsuch, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And so you have no doubt that it's not going to get remanded back to the district court?
Well, I don't think so, because what the district court here has issued an injunction saying, you know, on a finding of likelihood of success on the merits without even mentioning the relevant statute that unambiguously cuts the other direction.
Dr. Eastman, I don't know why we haven't had you on the show before.
You got to counterbalance Irwin a lot more often.
So well, we've had a lot. We've had the righties and the lefties, but I would love for you to come on with Irwin because it would be a fascinating debate.
Please.
Well, he and I do that debate all over the country quite frequently, so we'd be happy to.
I know you do. But I hope you're a little more respectful than Professor McConnell was from Stanford when he said to Irwin on our show, "What planet are you on, Irwin?"
Yeah, I remember that.
That was funny. Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. John Eastman, Henry Salvatore Professor of Law and Community Service at Chapman University's Fowler School of Law. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you are listening to Gervie's Law. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back after the break, we have Mark Mermelstein talking about fraudulent guardianships. Stay tuned.
KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Calling all early birds and night owls. Get Norm's Bigger, Bigger, Better, Better breakfast all day and all night. Hickory smoked bacon, Link sausage, ham, eggs, hash browns, and buttermilk hotcakes. Only $6.79. Get your fill of Norm's famous Bigger, Better breakfast. Open 24/7. Normsrestaurants.com.
A reminder, we have a special edition free Money Matters Retirement Seminar, 1 p.m. next Saturday, March 25th, Radisson Hotel Chatsworth, 7 p.m. Thursday, March 30th, Embassy Suites Arcadia, or 1 p.m. April 1st, Courtyard by Marriott Laguna Hills. Find out if you have the best financial plan for your retirement needs so you don't run out of money during your retirement years. The best time to take Social Security, if you are properly diversified, how to plan for retirement income, and much more. Please reserve now at moneymatters.net. That's moneymatters.net or call 800-994-0300.
We all have issues, so let's start talking.
In Your Right Mind is a new weekly behavioral health show that focuses on issues that pertain to just about everyone.
Join me, Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and my co-host, Christina Kusner, as we highlight topics that get people talking.
In Your Right Mind is every Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Ever wish you could see Dr. Drew and Mike unfiltered and uncensored?
You mean like naked?
No, I mean live at the Ice House in Pasadena.
That's right. Join Mike and myself for a live podcast Thursday, March 23rd.
This is going to be an evening of unfiltered, uncensored fun with plenty of laughs and stories, plus Q&A.
And I'm hearing Rudy will be there.
That's right, dog. I'm coming with Mike, fool.
Oh, no kidding. Hopefully Javier. Well, he's got to get past immigration first.
Charlie Holmes, that's cold.
The Dr. Drew and Mike Catherwood live podcast Thursday, March 23rd at the Ice House Comedy Club in Pasadena. Get your tickets now at KABC.com.
The Pentagon says March Madness is jeopardizing national security.
And a boob-loving raccoon on the next McIntyre in the Morning. Get smart 5 to 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah, get to the happy part. Come on, Carrie, sing it.
I heard a horrible.
Cause I'm happy.
Oh my gosh, you're dancing and singing. No, this story was terrible, and it's been hard for me to listen to this happy song ever since. There was a woman driving and texting saying, basically, I love this happy song. It makes me feel so happy. The minute she sent it, a Mack truck hit her car straight and killed her. And every time now I think of this song, that's what I think of.
You know, I don't believe that.
On my life.
Really?
Dead. I was doing the news.
I don't believe it. I think it's fake news.
No. It was real.
How do you know? What's real and what's fake?
You have a computer in front of you. Google it.
I'm looking at NCAA scores right now.
That made me sad.
Tied game? Oh, no. Wisconsin just pulled ahead. We're going to have Rob Stone on at the end of the hour to talk a little NCAA hoops. And there's quite a game going on. But listen to Gervey's Law. You can hear who wins. It's Villanova in Wisconsin. I picked Nova, but I didn't have them going all the way in my bracket, so I'm not going to be too disappointed if they lose, because then I'm sure a lot of people are going to be out. But we'll ask Rob what's going on in the NCAA today and some of the other issues that the NCAA basketball deals with, especially during this month, the month of March. But right now, we are happy to have on the show, and I use the word happy because it is that happy day today, International Happy Day. And we're hoping that, you know, we're going to have a happy ending to your story.
Yes, I hope so as well.
And it's Mark Mermelstein. He's a partner with the Orrick Law Firm here in Los Angeles. He is a trial lawyer with more than 20 first chair trials, and he specializes in white collar criminal defense and complex litigation. He's also the global co-chair of the firm's cybersecurity and data privacy team. Mark, that's quite a mouthful, but what I didn't say, which is most important, is you're Canadian.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. A big fan of the Montreal Canadiens and doing some wonderful work with Kasem Cares.
Yes, he actually has. He's, being an advocate and doing what we do and trying to put in laws that stop a lot of elder abuse. A lot of it's financial. So, yes, mostly Kasem Cares deals with isolation and stopping isolation. But most of the time, not all the time, you isolate an individual to perpetrate fraud. And that's what's going on. I've been helping families all over the country. And there's one family that I'm helping. I don't want to, because I'm dealing with a lawsuit, going to talk broadly. But I was helping a family out where someone took everything. They took everything from the grandchildren, took everything from the kids, everything. And I went up to help them. I went out there to help them. I sat through many court cases with them. I was working with them. And I started to talk about this case on air. And I'm now getting sued. By simply presenting
the facts. I
talk
about cases all the time on air. What I do.
But anybody can
sue
you.
Come on, people, bring it on. Bring me the lawsuits. I feel bad for you because you really shouldn't. Mark, let's bring Mark in here because let's talk about this fraudulent guardianships. How did you get involved with this kind of work? And tell us what it is.
So the way I got involved, and I think we have to appreciate that fraudulent guardianships is really just part of a larger issue of really elder financial fraud. As our population is getting older,
right,
we have the most vulnerable adults, their defenses are weakened, and we have rampant fraud going on, really taking from them.
So you're doing some really great work by getting involved with people who obviously can't take care of themselves, or in some cases, maybe they can. I don't know, folks, if you're listening and you want to call and tell Mark about your situations, it's 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. I know this is a very emotional subject for a lot of people as people are getting older and people taking advantage of it. Who are the people that take advantage of the people who you're trying to help?
Well, that's really a question of who commits fraud in this country. And it can be folks of all shapes and sizes, people who find a mark. Find someone who's elderly, perhaps has dementia, so they know that person's defenses are going to be weakened at some point, and then they befriend them.
But we're not always talking about dementia. Carrie, you are representing people who maybe aren't incompetent.
Right. We've had a few people come to us saying, help me. I've been placed in a guardianship. I am not incompetent. There is one case that we are working with Mark and a woman named Kathy Braun, who is the chairman of the board of Kasem Cares. And she and I and another woman named Julie Belshi, who will be on the show soon, we are the ones who receive all the phone calls, all the letters, all the victims call us. So we're that team there. So we take calls constantly from people saying, please help, please help. And what we'll do is if they're in a state where we've passed a law, we give them, we send the law to them. If they're in a nursing home and the federal law can be used, we send the federal law to them. But in certain cases, when somebody's under guardianship, when you are placed under guardianship, you lose all your constitutional rights. And that guardian has all they can get right into your bank account. If you try and get out of guardianship or your family tries to get a loved one out of guardianship, that guardian uses that person's money, your money, to fight against you. So it's a lose-lose situation.
So, Mark, tell us about a specific instance, for instance. And I know you can't use names, or maybe you can, but tell us about what you're dealing with. You go to court on these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so where I come in is either if we're talking about fraudulent guardianship, there's really kind of two avenues potentially to deal with the situation. One is going to the judge where the guardianship was issued and fighting that and getting that turned around and really presenting the evidence that, hey, this person's not incompetent, and the process by which they were declared incompetent, declared incapacitated, was a fraudulent process.
Do you retain doctors? And I know that there's always a lot of dispute about who that doctor should be. In one case I was reading, it was a gynecologist who was actually giving opinions on mental competency.
Well, the issue there is that a lot of the statutes around the country that are the gating item for how someone gets declared incapacitated, they don't necessarily require that it be a psychiatrist that actually renders the medical opinion. It can be merely a physician. And so if it's a physician and you're in a small town, it may not be that there is necessarily a psychiatrist who's available and willing to be appointed by the court to do the evaluation.
So you see that more often than you would like to?
Certainly more often than I'd like
to. Can you take a deposition of a doctor, for instance, who indicates a person is not competent and you're trying to prove there is competency?
Yeah. So essentially what I would do in a situation like that is put together the evidence to present to the court that, hey, this person is not incapacitated, and that's typically getting a report, having a doctor, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, maybe a couple, take a look at the patient, okay, to look at the ward,
right? Because it's not necessarily a patient,
right.
And the ward, would he or she be testifying to indicate whether or not he or she feels that he or she does not need to be under this guardianship?
Absolutely.
Some states allow it, some states don't, and that's the scary thing. Some states will allow the person, the ward, the one under guardianship, or in California, conservatorship here, will allow somebody to testify, and some states won't. They just take it, they take the judge, the public guardian, or the doctor's word for it, and there you go in, you're done. There's nothing you can say. This happened to my friend Julie Belshi, who works now with Kasem Cares. Her parents were taken. There was no, they could not go on up on the stand. They couldn't fight back. They were taken by a woman named April Parks. She was a public guardian, and she took them, knocked on their door, and said, "You're going to come with me or you're going to jail." And they were terrified. They went with her, and they put them in a nursing home, then split them up. And Julie Belshi, their daughter, said, "What's going on with my parents? They have a house, they were living fine. What's happening? Oh, this must be a mistake," and thought that they would get out of the guardianship fairly quickly. No, she got a lawyer, couldn't afford one, but got as much money as she could, got the lawyer. The lawyer couldn't do anything, so she went pro se for 2 years. She actually won the case. The judge that handled it is now gone off the bench, and the woman was just arrested last week. And the DA in Nevada, Steve Wolfson, there's over 200 felony counts on her for elder abuse.
Oh.
So she won that. But that is so rare.
You know, you're talking about elder abuse. Mark Bermelstein with the Oreck Law Firm. You talk about the financial interests that are behind these fraudulent guardianships. Give us examples. I mean, it must be really sickening for you to see where money actually motivates people to put loved ones away and take away their civil rights.
Well, in most cases, it seems to me that's actually what's driving it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a fraudulent guardianship, that is really the last act in what I call monetizing the fraud. It's that you identify your person that you're going to go after, and you get into a situation where either it can be a fraudulent guardianship, in which case there can be money transfers there. Right, the guardian is being paid from the ward's estate.
When you say guardian, you're not talking about a family member, are you?
It's not necessarily a family member. It's someone that's appointed by the court to take care of the ward.
But what about the family? Are they standing back and watching this? Are they cheering for it? I mean, are people that diabolical that they want someone who they love, who they're close to, and they're just allowing this to happen or actually perpetrating it?
Well, it really depends. I mean, you can have situations where dad dies, mom dies, and there's a substantial inheritance, and the kids can be fighting over the inheritance. And if one of them is declared incompetent, then that kid is not going to receive the inheritance. That inheritance is going to go essentially to the court, and the guardian is then going to use that money to, quote unquote, take care of the ward. And so the guardianship process can really act to prevent the ward from receiving an inheritance.
Wow. I mean, it just seems so unfair. And you think about it, we hope that the court system will help and resolve these issues. But if they need you, a lot of times I'm sure it's difficult.
I want to talk about one case that I know, Mark, when we started talking to him a while ago about, we find that there's these crime rings. It's the attorneys, the guardians, and the judges. And I'm not going to say who or where or what, but we kept saying, Mark, they're all in on it. They're all in it. He didn't believe us.
All meaning who?
The judge, the attorney, the doctor, and the guardian. They're
all in. And when you say the attorney, you're not talking about a person like Mark.
The attorney for the guardian.
Okay.
No. And said, look, they're all in it. They're all in this. And I like to say crime ring, because they find one person.
Wait a second. Those are strong words. Do you agree with that, Mark?
So I'll just step back for a moment. We're not talking about any
specific cases. I don't want to get sued.
There's no specific cases.
I don't want to get sued here.
I'm just saying there are these rings that where you go and you have somebody and you say, this person is not incompetent, and you will actually go there, prove the person's not incompetent, come there with records stating that a doctor, a real doctor, a doctor
right.
that deals with psychology,
like
and
a real judge.
Yes. Hey, this person's not incompetent. You've got to let this person out. They will absolutely do whatever they can to keep that person in guardianship.
So how do you win these cases?
So it's a matter of presenting the evidence and getting a fair shake. But you really have to present the evidence to the judge in a way that's compelling. And ultimately, as is the case that Carrie was referencing, it got flipped around.
It did.
The guardian.
And there was justice?
Sorry, I'm talking about Julie Belshi's case.
Okay, and Julie's on the line, so we want to talk to her in one second. But I have one question that I want to ask you. You're talking about all these cases. They're all over the country. How do you appear in other courts? I know you're from Côte Saint-Luc in Quebec, and you went to McGill. You're licensed, obviously, in California. How are you appearing in other states?
So I'm licensed in California and New York. But the law allows you can file a pro hoc vice application and appear in a court essentially anywhere in the country if you meet the requirements.
And that's what you've been doing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Julie Belshi is on the line. Julie,
yes.
Welcome to Gervie's Law.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great.
I'm honored.
It's great to have you. Now, Carrie was talking about your case. And you've had a chance to listen to a little bit about what Carrie and Mark are talking about. Tell us how this impacted you.
Well, this impacted me greatly. Back in 2013, we had plans. It was a Labor Day weekend, and we had plans to go and see my parents. And my mom, at that point, was in a wheelchair because she had been fighting CLL for so many years, and it left her body with neuropathy. I have been taking care of my parents for 6 months and made sure she got physical therapy. How it impacted me was that I went there to their home because they weren't answering their phone, and I knew something was terribly wrong because I had plans to go out there with my boys and have dinner, and school was just about to start. And that was our routine. Before they started school, we would sit down as a family and wish them all luck and what have you. Now, when I went there, there was a newspaper in the front of their driveway, and their house was not, it was closer or tighter than a tin drum. And the way that things were done, the blinds weren't closed properly the way that my parents had done them.
So
there
I did.
There were no windows open.
Julie, I just want to say that I did, before you came on, talk a little bit about how the woman came and knocked at the door and took your parents, and you had no
mm-hmm.
idea. There was no notification at all. You, and I did talk about the fact that you went pro se and got your parents back.
How long did that take?
It took me approximately 26 months.
26 months? And how were how were your parents doing during that period of time?
Well, they had them so over-medicated that it was like I kept going in there and talking to them and telling them, Mom, Dad, we have to do something about this. It's not going to get better. I've seen people actually die prematurely because of all the heartbreak that these people are going through.
Let me ask you, I just want to ask Mark, she talks about some of the, I don't know if we want to call it abuse or the difficult times that these people are going through while you're involved in a lawsuit. How do you feel like when you're trying, do you feel like you desperately want to get them in a better situation, but you know the law is really holding things up?
Well, it's a tragic situation, right?
Well, I know for one thing that in Las Vegas, I've been to probably over, I would say my husband and I have been over to a dozen, two dozen at least minimum attorneys.
It's really bad with so many attorneys, you know, and I'll tell you, Mark, when you talk about it being a tragic situation, you're one attorney, and it must be so hard to see this over and over again.
It's tragic. I mean, you're dealing with folks. These are the most vulnerable of our folks in society, and they're being taken advantage of. And part of the problem, which we haven't really talked about yet, is you'll have an attorney that gets appointed for the ward, and that attorney may not necessarily be stepping up and doing what is necessary to defend the ward's rights. And so
usually they're not.
Right. And that's the check on the system. Really, the idea behind the system is if you have someone that's vulnerable, at least they have an attorney speak up for them. And this is a court appointed attorney.
So what advice, because we have to close this up in a minute, but give us some advice that you could give to people, because I know a lot of people are listening to this and saying, and Carrie knows this because it happens all the time. They're always contacting Kasem Cares. And we're going to give the number out and the website out in a minute. But when people are listening to this and they hear it, what is the advice you can give them?
Well, that's really the advice. The advice is don't give up. Don't take it lying down. If you're the family member and you see this happening or potentially see this happening, you have rights. Reach out to Kasem Cares. They will help you out. We're also looking at having Kasem Cares help folks out to the extent we have angel investors who come in and they can financially back
sure.
the efforts.
They need money. You can't do this. Isn't
let me
free.
Just say, Kasem Cares does not. I mean, we're going to get calls saying, please help us, please help us. We don't have the money to do that, but we do. What we do is we try and find people who are angel donors that will back somebody's case or that will help somebody get out of it or that will get them an attorney if somebody's being isolated. But Kasem Cares, I just want to say that does not have that money to do that yet. That is something we really want to do. But we do have wonderful people
helping
us.
But you do want to hear people's stories.
Yes,
right?
We want to hear stories. We do. We can help you. We do have a hotline. If you go to kasemcares.org, the number is right there. You can also write us. We will get back to you and we will do what we can to help. And I want to say in closing that there are some amazing guardians. There are some wonderful guardians. There are some, I mean, for the most part, we've met great guardians and fiduciaries that are phenomenal, that are honest, that are ethical. It's the, 2.5%, they say, of people who are evil in this world. And those are the ones we're talking about.
Right.
Not the people that need guardians, not the ones that do a good job for their wards. The people that are, unethical and are thieves. That's who we are talking about today.
And the reason why you guys are doing such great work is because these people can't help themselves. They need your help because a lot of them don't know where to turn and they are the most vulnerable.
Yeah. And so I do want to say, I know Julie Belshi is still on. She fought the good fight. And she did, get the DA along with a man named Rick Black and Dr. Sam Sugar, who heads up AAAPG. They fight the good fight. And finally, they brought down April Parks and that whole, I like to say crime ring,
right?
Because it is. They are all going to jail.
Well,
three of them.
We want to thank Julie Belshi for being on the line because she has really given us her story, which is a real compelling one. Mark Mermelstein from the Orrick Law Firm in Los Angeles. congratulations on all the great work you're doing. Good luck with everything as you move forward with the Kasem Cares Foundation, and thanks for being on Gervie's Law.
Thanks very much for having me.
We're going to be back in a minute. We're going to talk to Rob Stone, who is the lead college basketball host for Fox Sports, after this message. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
In every life, we have some trouble.
Your source for breaking news, live and local, KABC.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-461-2525. That's 1-800-461-2525. 1-800-461-2525. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Get protection for covered repairs with a vehicle service contract from Toco Warranty. Unlike other companies, with Toco, there's no down payment, and the monthly payments are really affordable. Keep your hard-earned cash and call Toco Warranty right now at 800-261-7500 to save big money on covered auto repairs. Prices vary by vehicle, but for about the cost of a tank of gas per month, a Toco plan has your back on expensive covered car repairs. Monthly payments are very affordable. Get your free quote now. Call Toco at 800-261-7500. That's 800-261-7500.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 4242 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 4242.
We got a real good show for you.
Coming up on The Next Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, we'll tell you how badly the marathon ruined your weekend.
And we'll tell you how much money Beauty and the Beast make. What did Mance say, 160 million?
Something like that.
We'll see.
Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Mike Hathaway right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Don't worry, babe.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Kerry Kasem and Alan Gervey.
All righty, we are back. I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with Kerry Kasem, and I got to tell you, this has been kind of a depressing show. We talked about the travel ban first, and then we talked about fraudulent guardianships. But it's supposed to be International Happy Day.
But it's great because the people that were involved in what I was talking about are all in jail.
Okay.
I mean, that's great.
That's not great.
No?
And I know a lot of other people who are depressed right now. Those people who picked Villanova to go all the way are now crying. They're not saying, don't worry, be happy. We have on the line with us right now Rob Stone, who's the lead college basketball host for Fox Sports. Rob, welcome to Gervie's Law.
I'm not going to drag you guys down. We're going to be uplifting for the last couple minutes of your show. All right? That's what I promise to you. My oath, my pledge.
We appreciate that. And you never thought you'd be on a legal show on Saturday afternoon with all this great basketball action taking place, did you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my phone number got confused with somebody else's. But that's all right. I'm here to spread my wings, and I have absolutely no legal advice to give anybody at all.
Well, you may not have legal advice, but you are an opinionated guy. And when we talk about what's going on now here in this month of March with NCAA basketball, there are a lot of issues that people talk about. And sometimes people think that this isn't the greatest way to crown a national champion. Is it? Is this?
Who says that? Who are those people? I want them. They're wrong. They're absolutely wrong.
Why are they wrong?
It's the time of the year for college basketball. Because it's a wide open field. I love the fact that you are, just because you're a major power, a blue blood in college basketball, doesn't give you the right to be the national champion like it happens so often in college football. In college basketball, you have the opportunity to earn your way into this tournament, to this majorly profitable tournament for your conference, for your school, and obviously for the NCAA as well. And it's wide open. I mean, yeah, you're seeded, and yeah, you know, people, they do the analytics and the math and the data to figure out where you're seeded and how you match up. And obviously, the big conferences and the big teams usually get the higher seeds. But then you got like a Gonzaga, who's the number one seed this year, playing in a small conference and in an out-of-the-way type area, and they are given a fair shot to win the national title. I love the fact.
And they're killing North.
Tiny little schools you've never heard of before.
Right.
And they got a shot to walk away with the title.
But there's politics involved. Just like the law, we have politics. We talked about the travel ban, and we talked about maybe it's political, whether or not you agree with it or not, and what the judges are doing. So let's talk about, look at UCLA right here. Look what they have to go through to get to the Final Four.
Well, that's the concept. Everybody's got to go through something. You know, even if you're a number one seed like your Kansases or your Carolinas or Gonzagas and Villanova obviously eliminated. Look, Villanova had to take on a Wisconsin team that a ton of people had a lot of respect for and certainly feared. I guarantee you Jay Wright and Villanova were saying, crud, man, we got matched up with these guys in our second game. Like, this isn't fair. This is an outrage. We're the number one overall seed. We should have a cakewalk all the way through. Forget about it.
But it's Wisconsin.
That's the tournament.
Big Ten. The Big Ten isn't anything in basketball. Look at who the Final Four is going to be. Is there going to be a Big Ten team there?
Purdue.
No. Purdue. No. No.
They're the best shot.
They have a shot, but, you know, when you look at it, you look at how all the money seems to be, you know, with the Kentuckys, the North Carolinas, the Dukes.
There's plenty of money in the Big Ten now. Plenty of money.
Well, I guess.
They do in football.
In football.
So I don't think that's the one to hit. But there's certainly, you know, these mid-major conferences and the teams that come out of these quote-unquote small universities. Yeah, the budgets are different. And that's a fact of life. You know, grow up, deal with it, guys. This athletic department has earned this type of money through their fan base, through their alumni base, you know, through what they've done through the years. So that's just the realities of collegiate athletics. We see it at every level of every sport, you know, whether it's men's football or women's soccer, lacrosse, it doesn't matter. There's just these differences in budgets, and people have to deal with it. I think also, to a point, there is some thoughts about how certain teams get to certain places. And yes, they have all their math, right? They've got all their math nerds crunching numbers and banging things out, and this means this team is this and that. But in the end, I do agree that to some point, people will look and go, oh, it's a Big Ten team versus a Mountain West team. And they'll automatically say, oh, I've heard of Ohio State before, but I've never really heard of this. And they must have earned it, and the conference must be tougher. And I think that will always exist. And it exists to a point in college basketball. I think it exists even more in college football because that tournament, if you will, is so much more closed than it is for basketball. Basketball, they're able to be a little bit looser, a little freer. Like, look, maybe you didn't like the seating you were granted, but at least you got an invitation.
You know, you sound like a great attorney making an argument for the basketball.
I'm a horrible attorney.
Basketball playoffs.
I never took these classes. I get annihilated all the time. I'm just a I'm just a makeup guy with good hair.
You do look good, and kudos to your makeup person and your hair person. But you did play soccer at Colgate, so you know you're a tough dude. But you know, you mentioned something about the money here. Why are the athletes not participating in profit sharing? In August 2014, Ed O'Bannon, who of course played locally here, filed a claim against the NCAA, saying that it violated antitrust laws by not allowing athletes to be paid for the use of their names and likenesses. And that ruling by a woman judge, by the way, Claudia Wilkin, said that maybe each player should get about $5,000 from the profits. Doesn't that sound fair? And of course, that never stood. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think parts of it absolutely sound fair. You know, we've been ingrained in this athletic society in the university system that you get a scholarship and that's your pay, right? You get a free education. And to me, at least when I grew up, a free education was good Lord. Thank you. I hit pay dirt. You know, this is all I would need. And you get some uniforms and you get extra, you know, help with books and this and that. Like, that's a big perk. Let's not ever deny that. Right. I mean, there are people out there scraping by to get their kids through college and they would die for a free ride like some of these star athletes get. But these athletes are bringing in millions and millions of dollars into the school coffers. But the problem is, how do you differentiate walk-on Billy Joe from five-star recruit Don over here?
Right.
And do they all make the same because they're all part of the basketball program at UCLA or whatever big-time program? That's where it starts getting even uglier. And then football, look at all the guys they have here. Look, in the end, there is one sport that generates the funds for university athletics. It is football.
There are a lot of great programs,
and I love basketball, but they do not spend the money even close like football does.
Rob, I thought it was soccer, but or bowling.
I wish it was.
And I'm not going to bring up
sweep the funds.
Because you've got a widespread interest. I'm not going to bring up Hambone because I know you hate when people bring that up to you once a week.
No, I love it. I love my bowling days. Bowling could use some money. Boy, they would love some cash.
The Pro Bowlers Tour. Yeah, Adrian Peterson should have played on the Pro Bowlers Tour. He still might be playing. But let's talk about one and done before I let you go. Are you in agreement with one and done? And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, it's the requirement that the NBA has before a player can be drafted to play at least 1 year or to be at a certain age.
Yeah, I'm very old school with my college basketball love and passion, and I feel it robs the university and the fan base of what it truly is to be a supporter of that team is following these young athletes through the course of 3 or 4 years. And how they develop and what they mean to the program. And I feel like these one-and-doners, just they're borderline mercenaries. And they come in and they get their free ride. They get their basic training for the NBA. And then they're off without really fully giving much back to the university. Having said that, the university is obviously capitalizing on their athletic prowess. And I think it's almost more of a case-by-case basis because some of these talents – come out of some really tough means and really difficult family situations. And if you were granted the opportunity to provide not only for yourself, but for your family and your family's family down the line, you take it, right? I mean, that is a basic business concept. Guess what? You sign here, everybody's taken care of. And you guys have gone from nothing to this. Guess what? I'm pulling my kid out of school. Whatever it is. Is it 1 week into school? You got it. If you can take care of your whole family, you do it. So as much as I don't like the one and dones, I like to see these kids stay around and get their educations and continue to grow as young men and young women. I totally get it. And I'm fine with it because in the end, family first.
That makes sense, and that is a good sentiment. Family first on this International Happy Day. Before we let you go, Rob Stone from Fox Sports, I would be remiss if I don't ask you about what's going on in basketball this month, in the month of March, and who's going to take it all.
Loaded question. Look, we already saw the number one overall seed Villanova, as you mentioned, guys, at the beginning, fall today. The beauty of this tournament is the unexpected, and people in Vegas and everywhere else are waiting for those upsets, and can they make money off it and not. In the end, though, going back to our blue bloods, to the big schools, I think it's a Kansas, Duke, North Carolina type year and maybe even
Oh, that's
a
such a cop-out.
I'm a North Carolina guy through and through, so every bracket I fill out,
yeah,
I fill out with my heart, and it's North Carolina winning.
There you go. I have Duke over North Carolina. I agree with the Blue Bloods. I think that's where it's going to end. It's going to be a big-time program where we see it every time, but maybe we'll get some excitement before then. Rob,
we've already gotten it.
We have, but we got more.